Hello and welcome to Deliverability Defined. My name is Alyssa, and today, Melissa's not here, but we have a wonderful guest, Tarzan Kay. Welcome to the show, Tarzan.
Thanks for having me on the geekiest podcast that I listen to.
That makes me so happy. You don't even know. Like, yeah, I want to be the geekiest podcast.
Well, I tell my students all the time, like, so this podcast I listen to, Deliverability Defined, and I feel like it makes me sound so good and so smart.
Yay. Oh my gosh, this is going so well already. I love it. Thank you for the nice words. Sometimes I'm like, no one's listening to this. So it's nice to get a reminder that someone is, and it is one of their geekiest podcasts.
Kind of like email. Yes. Nobody's reading this, even though the metrics are right there.
Yeah. Like, it's probably all bots or something, but no, it's people. Thank goodness. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Okay. Yeah, it's about to talk about my favorite subject, which is email. So it's a good day.
Yeah, I'm so happy you're here. I don't know if I've told you this before in like an email exchange, but I always get like starstruck around you because it was my first week like as an employee at ConvertKit. I didn't know much about like the creator economy or anything, but I went to our Crafting Commerce conference and got to like meet a bunch of customers in person and just immerse myself in all the things. And you were a main stage speaker. And I just thought you were the coolest person. I think you were wearing like purple sparkly pants. Is that, am I making this up?
Famous Chanel sparkly pants.
Oh my gosh.
I used to be way more of a diva.
I love it.
And I love designer clothes. I still do. But I was so sparkly. And I also at the time, it was part of my brand. Is I was like, look at me. I'm so flashy. I'm so famous. And it's funny, like I'm really well known in my very small pocket of the industry, but this is my second interview today. And the person that interviewed me this morning was also like, I'm so flustered.
Yeah.
So just for the record, like 1,000 people on the internet know who I am. Maybe 10,000. I'm not that famous, but somehow I come off like I am.
Well, yeah, I always like that. Your talk really stuck with me. I think more than anyone else who spoke at that conference. And I remember referencing it a lot. You were talking about like having a smaller but really engaged email list and how powerful it was. And so anyways, once you started emailing me, I was like, oh my gosh, I know her. This is so cool. So I can't wait to talk to you today. Do you want to give us some more insight on your background? Like, how did you get into this weird email niche that some of us fall into? And what exactly do you do in the email world?
Okay. I kind of found it a bit by chance. I started as a copywriter and I was like freelance copywriting. And I started my business like properly in January 2016. Like I rented an office and I had like a one-year-old child. And my partner and I decided that I would be the provider and they would stay home with our child. So I started this business and I was writing sales pages and a little bit of email for course creators. And really quickly, I was like, oh no, email is my thing. Like, this is something I'm naturally good at. And I just really leaned into offering that as a service. It sort of started as an experiment, like, okay, what if I make myself like the email expert? Also, in my first year in business, there was this email copywriting competition that I entered. And I won.
Ooh.
And it was like not that big a deal, but it was a big deal because for the first time, there were like 150 people in the world that saw me as someone who's really good at email marketing. So I thought, okay, let me lean into this. And I, you know, started editing my website and my services to be really email focused. And it really went from there, like within a couple, I have been a ConvertKit customer for like a really long time. I had a brief affair that we don't talk about.
That's okay.
I left and I came back, but I'm back now. And that was a mistake.
All that matters is you came back. That's okay.
I came back.
Yeah.
Yes. I started like in 2016, I started my email list and I remember signing up to ConvertKit and there was no free account at the time and I was barely making anything. So, you know, committing to like, I don't know, I think it was $40 a month or something.
Wow.
It was a pretty big deal. And it was the first software investment that I made. and I had 37 subscribers. And I remember like I emailed past clients, like I asked people in the courses I was in, like, can I add you to my email list? And I started emailing bi-weekly. And, you know, I'm working with clients, I'm building this thing. I started running ads really quite soon. Like I would say within a year or two, I started running ads to grow my list because I'm not really a content creator. Like I don't do that much I'm really inconsistent on social. Like I am wildly consistent with email. I started bi-weekly and I think within about a year, I went to weekly. There was a time when I was doing twice a week for probably 2 years. Now I'm back to once a week for sure. And sometimes, you know, another email if there's something promotional going out. But I've been on that schedule basically since day one. And for subscribers, again, like they came just from me asking and then running ads and being inconsistent on social media. So I've always run ads. That's been my like primary list growth. But I also did a lot of speaking. Like I think I spoke at Craft and Commerce in 2019. I hope your listeners all ask to have me back because I really want to be a speaker again. It was one of my favorite speaker events I ever spoke at. And ConvertKit treats their speakers so well. Like, oh my God, I felt so cared for. And the hotel rooms in Boise were like so nice.
Oh, good.
I could go on about it all day. I had so much fun. Like such a great conference. Yay. Now I'm trying to cover too many things with one answer.
No, this is perfect.
So growth. I think we're talking about growth. I grow through ads. Oh yeah, speaking. So I also grew my email list through speaking on podcasts like this, speaking at live events. Pre-pandemic, I used to do a lot more speaking. I kind of haven't picked it up. My business went through like, what would we call it? Like just a pretty big change, a lot of changes in my business. And I haven't picked up public speaking again, but I probably will because it's a great way to get list growth. It's slow. But those subscribers that join my email list, like, because they saw me at an event, they're like lifers. They're people that remember me forever and read my emails forever. So that, you know, compared to someone who saw a Facebook ad, like those subscribers don't always stick around as long. Mm-hmm. Anyway, now I answered 15 questions at once. Is that enough of my story?
That's perfect. I mean, you listen to this podcast, so you know we're very rambly, tangenty. Like we go with the flow here. So I thought that was perfect. Thank you. And I totally understand what you mean, especially after seeing you speak. And like, I mean, that was almost 5 years ago. And it's really like, I can't remember most people who spoke at that conference, but yours really stuck with me. And so I can understand why those subscribers are going to be way more engaged than someone who might have just found you with an ad. But speaking of your talk at Craft and Commerce, and I think one of the reasons your talk resonated with me so much is because of with my role at ConvertKit and my previous role, just sort of this deliverability world. I work with a lot of people who just want to focus on list growth and open rates, basically, but they don't want to focus on the engagement, the copy, the like subscriber experience, and really sending emails that people love. And so they'll just kind of blast out whatever they want to blast out and get frustrated if like their open rates are low or it's not converting the way they want to. And I feel like you're someone who really gets it. You get that like you need to send emails that people love. And that is way more powerful than having a huge list of people who aren't getting emails that they love and who aren't super engaged. So I'd love to hear you talk more about that because I feel like you just have such a great perspective on that. Why should someone not care as much about list growth?
So growth and engagement. Contrary to these people who are asking you this, I am awesome at engagement and not so good at growth. I mean, that's why I've always paid for leads. So I want to know what those people know. And I know a lot about engagement. My subscribers do. So I guess first, let's just define what we mean by engagement. Like I would define it as obviously people who open and click and also people who reply, people who share your emails with other people. Like, you know, some of that is measurable and some of it's not, but you can feel when subscribers are engaged. And that's like one of the most important reasons to focus on engagement because otherwise it can really feel like you're talking to a brick wall. If nobody's replying and nobody's talking to you, it's easy to think like, are people really listening? But actually, what I love about email as a medium and why I've chosen to make it the center of my business is because it's relationship building. It's like where I do the most relationship building is on the back of the email replies to my newsletter. And there's a lot you can do to encourage replies. I do just want to say, just like to share some metrics here. Like my weekly newsletter goes to about 10,000 people. And, you know, like a common newsletter, like I would say I get maybe 10 replies. So think about that as like one reply per 1,000 subscribers. So
love it.
If you don't have a lot of subscribers and you don't get a lot of replies, like it's easy to get discouraged. I mean, on a good day, like I could also get like 100 replies, but I'm just saying like as a baseline, like you gotta, you do have to manage your expectations so you don't draw conclusions. So you don't draw false conclusions when you don't get replies. But there's a lot you can do to get more replies. Like for one thing, you have to be writing about stuff that people are interested in. So how do you do that? Like listening to your subscribers is really important. I send out surveys all the time. I just sent out a survey last week. Like I'm trying to gauge like what's the value of the newsletter for them? What do they want to hear about? Anytime someone hits reply on an email, like that's an opportunity for me to get content ideas. So I'm always looking for the things that they care about and writing emails about those on those topics. But in terms of driving replies, asking them questions, but really specific questions. Like, let's say I teach crochet and I have an email list about crochet. And my, you know, I could end an email with like, so Alyssa, tell me, what is your number one struggle when it comes to crochet? That's like a big question. And there's a million different answers. Like, are we talking about my yarn? Are we talking about the hook? Are we talking about patterns? Like, versus this question, Alyssa, what's one problem you had with the last pattern you bought? I don't know. I don't actually know about crochet, but like,
yeah, that's okay. I don't either. Sounds right.
The more specific the question, the more replies you're going to get. Like, let's say my emails are about business. Let's say I hit reply. I say to my subscribers, hit reply and tell me what's one thing on your task list this week that you're putting off. Like, it's way easier for people to connect to things that they feel negative about, honestly. So what are you struggling with? What's hard right now? But like specific. And that will generate some really great conversation. Like that's also has the added benefit of people telling you specifically like what their issues are. And that's future content for you. That's like that person might turn into a customer if you have a relevant offer. But you can also use replies just as a way of training the inbox, like to improve deliverability. And obviously it depends on the inbox, but like I use Superhuman to check my email. And as soon as I hit reply on any newsletter, it automatically delivers that newsletter to the important inbox, unless I move it somewhere else. And, you know, that's just one example of one provider. So you do really want to encourage replies because if you can get in the primary inbox, you want to be in the primary inbox. I would also say, I had one of my students, actually, I'm really curious what you think about this.
Yeah.
I had one of my students, I'll get back to the engagement question, don't worry, but you said we could ramble.
Yes.
One of my students asked me about those, people call them chatty footers. And like you put all of this text in your footer to like trick the algorithm into getting into the primary inbox, thus improving deliverability. Because if you're in the primary inbox, obviously more of your emails are going to get opened. First of all, Alyssa, does that really work?
No.
It doesn't work.
Well, here's the thing about the promotions tab. It's constantly changing. I've done so much testing around the promotions tab, and someone might have found that like with certain broadcasts they sent, if they add that thing, it goes to primary. It used to go to promotions. But the thing about the promotions tab is like next week, that probably won't work anymore.
Right.
It's always changing and it's not a great experience for subscribers. In my opinion, if they have their promotions tab set up, they might want your email to go to the promotions tab. And so using this hack to try and force it to the primary tab, that might also be really confusing for customer or subscribers. You're like, they might be thinking, why is all this text in the footer? I don't recommend it. There are other ways to encourage your emails to land in primary, like replies. That's honestly, I would say the biggest one. If you get a lot of replies to your emails, Gmail is going to be more likely to place the email in the primary tab. So that's the focus I would have and not these like weird internet hacks that some people come up with.
Yeah. Well, Gmail, are you saying Gmail is more likely to put it in the primary tab for that subscriber or for all subscribers?
Definitely for that subscriber, but then also for all subscribers if it's enough replies, if they see enough high engagement from your domain.
Right. Cool. Okay. So we'll come back to this later, but like a lot of what I teach is consent-based email marketing. And there's something weird about that. That's like trying to get into that primary inbox. It's like, hang on a second. Like, these are adults, like they can manage their own inbox, and you like sneaking in there, as opposed to saying like, hey, if you really want these emails, drag this over to your primary inbox, like give them a choice, let them do that. So I think there's like a greater issue here where like, it's a waste of time to like look for hacks and tricks to improve your engagement. Like, actually, there's things that we know work, that consistently work, and it's real engagement. It's like talking to people about things that they care about, asking for replies, sending relevant links that they're going to click on. Like those sorts of things, they not only do they drive engagement and improve your deliverability, that's also relationship building. Like that is how customers are made. Customers are not made by some sneaky footer text that gets you into the primary inbox.
Amen. I just want to like do a mic drop. That's exactly what I preach. I love that.
And thanks for coming to my TED Talk.
Yes, that is so good. I'm glad to have someone else backing us up on this, because some people really get so hung up on it. And I try to convince them that like exactly what you just said. You don't want to sneak your way into the primary tab. Let subscribers, you know, have your messages land where they want it to land. Everyone has their own organization of their inbox. And if they want it in primary, they can move it there. Love it.
Yeah. Like the other thing is predictability is important with email marketing. Like, you know, I've been sending my weekly newsletter for 7 years every Tuesday. And if I don't show up on a Tuesday, like people would reach out like, hey, did I miss your newsletter? Am I still on the list? Like, that's because they know when to expect it, probably what inbox is going to land in. Like if you're moving all over the place, like it's hard to track. Like you actually just want to show up in the same place each week.
Yep. That's another really great sign of an engaged audience. I'll work with some people who have major, like a sudden inbox placement issue, and their, you know, weekly newsletter went to spam and no one reached out to them about it. They just like found it out through their open rates. Mm-hmm. And then I'll have another sender who like had a weird, you know, thing happen, or maybe there was a delay to their emails and they had like 10 people being like, I haven't got your newsletter yet. I normally get it at 8 a.m. And, you know, I'm always like, wow, that is an engaged audience. So that's just an interesting other way to kind of take the temperature of your engagement.
Yeah. And the other thing is like, this is all connected to revenue. Like if people are not like, who cares if your email list has 100,000 subscribers? If people aren't opening and clicking, like you can't sell ads. You can't like you're going to fizzle out on like referral swaps very quickly because they're not very high value. Like you won't get people coming back to run ads or do swaps again. Like engagement matters so much more than the size of your email list. Like I have, you know, what I would consider a small email list compared to other newsletter operators, you know, who I follow in the space. However, like I could, in some cases, get a similar number of clicks with my 10,000 person email list to someone with 40 or even 50,000 subscribers because it's so engaged.
That's amazing. I think a lot of people struggle with reaching that sort of engagement. So I would love to hear, do you have any advice for us, maybe specifically around copy? Mm-hmm. Like, how do we write these amazing emails that really not only are valuable to subscribers, but they're engaging, like they're easy to read. You can, you know, get value out of them. I think not all of us are great copywriters. So any tips you have are super appreciated.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I obviously have a huge head start. Like that's really what made me good as an email marketer right out the gate, because I'm a great writer. It's also because I've been practicing for 7 years. Like I have written literally thousands of emails. So that's the first thing people need to know. Like if you want to be a great writer, you have to write a lot and you have to read a lot. Like that's the biggest.
No easy route.
Yeah, there is no easy route. However, I am also a personal brand and I do a lot of storytelling. And the thing that about storytelling is people often think that they have to tell a whole story and you don't really have a lot of time in the inbox. Like you can't start at the beginning and give a bunch of backstory and then go to the middle and go to the end. It's funny, anytime I get ChatGPT to analyze my emails, which you can totally do, by the way, just like plug your favorite email into ChatGPT and ask it, what's good about this email? Like, could you turn this into a template for me? And ChatGPT will tell you exactly what's good about it.
Wow.
And one thing that it will say about my emails is that I use non-linear storytelling. And what that means is I tell a lot of stories, but I don't start at the beginning. So, you know, just as an example, let's say today let me just tell the story from the beginning. 3-4 years ago, I wanted to get my teeth straightened. And I went into the dentist and I got all these scans and I got Invisalign and then I wore them for like a year. Oh, you too. Yeah.
I have them in right now.
So I wore them for like a year and a half. And then the story's already getting boring. It's like way too long. Anyway, fast forward to today. I went to see my dentist. I thought I was going to be done. And sure enough, he's like, no, let's do one more refinement. Like, I'm going to be wearing these freaking things until I'm 85 years old. Instead of telling that whole story in a linear way, I could start at the end. I'm in my dentist's office for the 45th time in the last 5 years. And then I could go back to the beginning. 4 years ago, I wanted to get my teeth straightened, XYZ, right? So that's like a really, that's called in media res. And basically what it means is drop the reader in the middle of the story. Like, we start where the action is. We've all seen like Mission Impossible or whatever, you know, those sorts of like action movies where it starts with like a hot scene. That's like, you don't know how they're going to get out of a locked room that's slowly filling up with water. And then we go back to the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. That's really important for storytelling. You never start at the beginning. And the other thing, and the sixth practice, is you really have to get good at self-editing. Like, that is one of a writer's most important skills. And even me, I've been doing this for 7 years. I had a client, I was writing for homebuyer.com, and the CEO I was working with was like really grammarian and wanted the emails to be short and sharp and had like no patience for any sort of meandering. And I wrote a series of emails that were like less than 400 words per email, which is pretty short for an email. And I really had to be ruthless, and my ability for self-editing improved a lot. And that's after 7 years. So being able to spot extra words, like, that's your first task, is like sentences you started with if and but. Usually those are just extra words. Sentences that start with, it is my belief that, I think that, it is commonly observed that, like, those statements immediately like weaken whatever is about to come next. Like, consider the difference between like, it is my belief that email marketers who send more emails make more money versus email marketers who send more emails make more money. It's like so much more definitive. We don't need all those extra words. So that does take time to train yourself. Like, that's one of the biggest things I do in my classes is I do live editing, and I'm basically like, don't need this, take this out, unnecessary. When I'm editing myself in a Google Doc, I open up what I call a cutting room floor. And I got this from a fellow copywriter, Sage Polaris. And it's like, I'm editing my email and I'm like, does it make sense without this sentence? Let me just take it out and put it on the cutting room floor. It's easier to move things to a cutting room floor than to delete things, because we're just like every writer, but especially newer writers, like, it's easy to get precious about what you've written and you're like, can't delete anything, move it to a cutting room floor. The last copywriting tip I will say, and I have been shouting about this like since 2016, use Hemingway app, hemingwayapp.com. You don't have to pay for it. You don't have to download anything. It's literally right on the homepage, Hemingway app. You like paste your text into this field and it will highlight hard to read sentences, very hard to read sentences, adverbs. Most of the time you do not need adverbs. They just clutter up your writing, make you look like an amateur, and it will highlight several other things. You might even do spelling. I don't think it does. It's not really a spelling and grammar thing. It's more like clean up your writing and make it sharper. It will also give you like readability score and it'll grade your writing. So it'll say like, this is a grade 9 reading level, and you want to keep it at like 5 to 7 to make it like really easy to read. And that usually means eliminating like, we're unnecessary. Like, think about the difference. Can I just tell you my least favorite word in the whole world, Alyssa?
Please do.
My least favorite word, every time I see it, it makes me so mad.
I'm excited.
Utilize. You utilize. Can just say use. And we all do this. Like, we're trying to sound smart. We're trying to sound professional. We want to be perceived in a certain way. And we utilize really big words to make ourselves sound smart. Like, not worth it. You're sacrificing readability. So just right. Keep it simple, like around a grade 5 reading level. Eliminate those adverbs. Don't start sentences with if, and, or but unless you really need to. You know, delete it. Does the sentence make sense without it? Then you don't need it. That's all I have to say. Closing the parentheses on that.
I love it. That is so good. I love that you mentioned storytelling. I feel like I had a big breakthrough moment with storytelling, I don't know, a year ago, because I felt like, well, I talk about deliverability. Like, I can't do storytelling. This is a technical thing. This is a how-to thing. And it was when I was prepping for a speaking event that while reading what I was planning to say, my husband was like, can you tell like a story or something? And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Let me try that. And then like, I totally changed my talk and had multiple stories throughout it about deliverability. Like, it's such a topic that, you know, could be potentially like boring or dry or whatever. So I just want to encourage anyone who is listening to that being like, okay, that's helpful. But like, I write about XYZ and I can't tell stories about that. Like, I bet you can. Mm-hmm. And it's actually super powerful when you do. It makes everything so much more engaging and hooks people in. I hope that everyone will explore that if they haven't already.
Yeah. It's also just the way our brains are wired. Like, people want to hear the end of a story. Like, if you open a loop in the subject line, it's just really hard to resist because we're wired to want to know the end. So, and it's also how we learn. Like, there's lots of good research to show that people retain a lot more information through stories. And the other thing is, like, when people are in their inboxes, like, people think as an email marketer, like, I need to give value. I need to like teach things. I need to give like tips and tricks. But value comes in a lot of different forms. And one of the biggest ways we get value is through entertainment. Mm-hmm. And stories are just, they're entertaining. If you can deliver a lesson wrapped in a story, like, people will remember it. They will remember you. And it's just a lot more effective than a bullet list of 12 different things to do, which makes me tired and makes me want to unsubscribe.
Yes, that is so good. Like, I wish I had learned that a lot earlier. I've sent some really boring emails.
Me too.
But that's so helpful. I'm curious, are there any common mistakes you see people make when going about this journey or just in general email marketing? I guess one of the mistakes you just mentioned, which is like sending out those boring kind of tips and tricks without any sort of storytelling. Is there anything else you can think of?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people list build without actually emailing their list. Like, you know, this is like sort of a frustrating problem that I have, which is people like, I sell a program on email marketing and people don't take it because they don't have subscribers. But then the people who do take it, they have cold subscribers. So I'm like, no,
right.
Cold subscribers is actually not that much better than no subscribers. So like, if you are list building and list nurturing like need to happen concurrently. Otherwise, you're basically starting at zero. So, you know, it doesn't have to be every week. It could be every other week. It could even be every month. But like, consistency is so, so important because it's really hard to re-engage people. Like, actually, I'm curious what sort of stats you have on this, Alyssa. Like, people who have been disengaged for 90 days or more, like, can those people really be brought back?
It's very, very uncommon. Like, usually if someone has a really cold list, I'll try to just get them to remove those people. But if, you know, they're like, I really want to at least try, when they do, and then they have that click to confirm you want to stay on the list. I mean, it's usually like single digit clicks, even on a huge list. It's like very few people are actually there and reading the emails and saying like, oh yeah, I still want to be on the list. This brought me back.
Yeah.
So it might happen for a handful of subscribers, but it's not very common at all once someone is that cold.
Yeah, I would have said the same. I just wanted to check. Like, in some cases, like, my students can get really caught up with like writing the perfect re-engagement sequence. I'm like, oh, it's just like not a great use of your time. Mm-hmm. Like, send them one email, see if you can win some people back, and like focus on getting more subscribers. Because the other thing is, like, really common thing is like, you know, you started a business doing one thing, but then like you refined what you're doing and you pivoted to some other offer. And like 2 years later, like what you're doing might be very different. So like trying to win back those people or like get them to like come along to your new thing, it's just not very efficient. It's better to be focusing on fresh subscribers and keeping them engaged. Cause like, it is just part of being an email marketer. Like people come and go, like that, you know, in social media, like your number, your follower count just like grows and grows and grows and grows artificially. It's not like you're actually like people are dropping off for sure. But you know, with email marketing, you win, you lose all the time. Maybe it's not winning, losing, like you're growing and shrinking at the same time all the time. And, you know, a lot of people don't send email because they're like so nervous that people are going to unsubscribe. Like they will. Mm-hmm. And actually you want them to. Like it's preferable that people unsubscribe if they don't want your email than that they like let it go cold and eventually go to spam. Like active unsubscribing is a good thing. I would not recommend looking at your email.
Yeah, just ignore it.
Like there's just no good that is ever going to come from looking at the names of the people who unsubscribe. I mean, I could do it now. I have so much experience. Like if my mother unsubscribed from my email list, I'd be like, no problem. These emails were never for you.
That's so funny.
But even like familiar names and friends, like it is so okay for people to unsubscribe. I send a lot of email. But we do need to like get a little distance. And I guess along the same vein is being able to take critical feedback. And that's something that I've had to learn. Like I do tackle some like really tough topics with my email list. Like a big focus of the last couple of years has been like anti-coercion, because the online course industry can be very coercive and predatory. So I do talk about that a lot. I also talk about anti-oppression. Like I just wrote an email about gender pronouns, and it's not things that people agree on. Like my business is very values driven, which isn't every business, and that's okay, but mine is. But because I'm so values driven, I take a stance on things now and then, and I get critical feedback, and it is so important to be able to listen to your email subscribers. Like you build trust by listening to them, even when they have critical feedback. Like, oh, could you tell me more about that? What would you have liked to see? What would you like to see in the future?
I love that example. I feel like, especially with, you know, with your email list example and talking about like the authenticity you bring, and, you know, not everyone shares like their values, like you said, with their email list. But I think it's important if you're someone who wants to do it, like do it and, you know, don't be apologetic about it and like be authentic about what you want to share with your list. I'll see some people like never share, you know, anything about their personal beliefs or values. And then all of a sudden they like decide they want to. And that can maybe feel a little more jarring for subscribers. And then mm-hmm. they see a ton of unsubscribes and a ton of complaints. And they're like, mm-hmm. what happened here? And I'm like, well, you literally never dip into anything like this in the years that you've sent email and you decided to, which is totally fine. But it is going to be a harder adjustment than like if people, you know, are used to seeing those sorts of things from you. So I like that idea of knowing who you are, how you want to show up, what you want to talk about, and being okay with that. And then listening to the feedback you get. And I love that approach.
Yeah. And you can use content notes. Like if I'm tackling a topic that I think might make people feel triggered or that they might just not be interested in reading about, I'll just put a little box at the top and, you know, content note, this email mentions XYZ, totally fine. If it's not for you, see you next week.
Love that.
Like sometimes like you never want your email to feel jarring.
Yeah.
Like you don't want people to feel like, where did this come from? So even an email like that, if you like suddenly something's happening that's like really important to you and you really want to like use your voice and like be, you know, in leadership around this particular topic, like you could say, hey, like this is different for me. And some of you might not like this and that's okay. Like next week we'll go back to the typical sorts of emails. But I just want to have this conversation over here.
I love that.
And you can like absolutely mitigate the fallout from emails like that.
That's so smart. I love it. It's like telling people what to expect, being upfront, all these best practices we always say with email marketing. And that's just another example of when that can be really helpful. So I'm curious, in an email that you sent to me, you mentioned that you made some recent changes to your own newsletter that increased the click to open rate. Do you want to talk more about that? Because you sent that and I was like, what changes? What happened?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've had like a really funny discovery lately. So, I mean, this will be like not news to you, but I recently discovered, like tripped over the whole newsletter growth space. And I have been in email marketing for 7 years and selling online courses. I'm really connected in the online course space. And I've also felt like it's like a bubble that I just really want to get out of. And the style was always like the email to a friend, black text, white background, not much else going on, like really simple, a simple style that worked for me for years. And I still like, even though it's like not trendy anymore, it was kind of, it was super cool in 2016. It was like the thing to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, I stumbled on the newsletter growth industry, like partly through, you know, because I'm at the top tier of ConvertKit, it comes with a Sparkloop account, and like part of learning how to use Sparkloop and like listening to their podcasts and learning from other Sparkloop users, I was exposed to the newsletter growth space and had this absolute epiphany, like, oh my God, I am a newsletter operator. Like that's my job.
Yeah.
Like that's what I've been doing this whole time. I didn't have a name for it. I was always like trying to explain my business. And I stumbled on this industry and was like, oh yeah, that's what I do. Like I operate a newsletter. Like I don't really do social media. Like there's a million things. I don't do webinars. I don't have a podcast. Like email. Like my newsletter is the most important and most consistent thing I've done. It's what generates all my revenue. So I also didn't read a lot of emails in the last 7 years, which I know is ridiculous, but it's partly like it can be a distraction. It can like give me imposter syndrome. Like I just sort of was careful about the email that I consumed. And then like, since I've had this, like my world just sort of burst open. Now I read like a million newsletters. And so my newsletter looks way different now than it did like even 4 months ago. Like I slowly, you know, I have that email from a friend style. And I used to even tell my students, like, it's fine if your email doesn't have any links. Like it's more important to be consistent than it is to have things to link to. I think that was probably okay like 5 years ago, but just like deliverability has gotten, you know, there's just a lot more obstacles in the way of deliverability. And like, we really do need people to click on things. Would you agree with that, Alyssa?
Yeah, I think there's like two different things here. Is deliverability has changed so much in that the plain text kind of email isn't as important to deliverability as it used to maybe be. There was a lot more like the content plays a role in deliverability. And now deliverability is so tied to your reputation that the content actually doesn't matter as much for the most part. So you can get fancier. It doesn't have to be this plain text. And then yes, also I think it's helpful to give people something to click on to engage with. And yeah, it helps.
Yeah. Okay. I am going to get back to your question, but I have one question for you first.
Yeah.
Because it used to be years ago, I used to teach my students that you don't want more than 40% images, like maximum 40% images to avoid the spam folder. Like, is that still true?
Probably not. There's definitely not like a magic number. I will say if you send an email that's only images, I have seen that cause problems because a lot of spammers use that tactic to like get their crappy content out. But I've seen some really, 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 really image heavy emails with not a lot of text make it to the inbox just fine. The biggest thing is that it can be a poor experience for users, especially if for some reason their email client doesn't load images, which can happen from time to time. Your email is not going to make any sense to them. So I mainly just talk about the balance. Like it's totally fine to use images. I know it makes emails look beautiful. Just make sure that, just pretend someone's images didn't load. Is your email still going to make sense with the text that's there?
Oh my gosh.
That's the most important part.
That is such a good tip.
Oh, yay.
Wow, I love that. I'm going to pass that on to my students. Does it make sense without the graphics? I would also add, like, really make sure that you're using alt text. Like, that's really important for people with low vision. People are using screen reader. Add the alt text, and that will improve things somewhat if people have images. Some people just have images turned off. So,
right.
So big change that I've made that I was coming around to with my long, convoluted story is my newsletter now looks like other newsletters.
Cool.
Like it has several repeatable sections. I'm having like the most fun creating snippets in ConvertKit. And there are certain snippets that are in my newsletter template, things like, you can rate my email. Like, what did you, and there's like the links that it links so to are really funny. I'm so proud of them. I have so many ridiculous Easter eggs in my newsletter. It's really fun.
I love that.
So voting on the email, my email signature, my referral, like Spark Loop referral widget, you know, obviously unsubscribe links, that's all built in, but I also have frequency options. People can change. They can get my newsletter weekly, monthly, or they can get all the emails I send. That's really the best subscription option. Get them all because they're all so good. So that, you know, there are sections and I've been experimenting with the layout, but a new section that I have added in the last couple months is links. Like, and I link to like, this seems so simple and basic, but I link for one thing in that section, if I'm doing a referral swap, it goes in there and I'm getting like Alyssa, the last time I did a referral swap, I got that guy got 111 clicks.
Oh my gosh.
I only have 10,000 subscribers and there were, I'm not kidding you, 25 links in that email.
Wow.
That guy got 111
clicks. That's amazing.
I'm like, I mean, I know you know, but maybe your audience doesn't know. Like that is a ridiculously good metric. It's really good. Like I should have sold that ad spot.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, I'm happy to know things are working. But there's like, you know, if I see something interesting on LinkedIn, which is the only social channel that I'm on, come hang out with me there, by the way. And then, you know, anyway, the interesting links that goes in there. And I usually give it a different headline each week because when people see the same thing week after week, like they glaze over, they scroll past it. So sometimes I move the section around, like maybe I'll put the interesting links at the top, maybe I'll put them at the bottom. I'm always experimenting, but I just have a way more links out. So my click to open rate has like, it's been like as much as 10%. And, you know, previously, like I didn't really have things to click on and I was doing okay. But now I do. And I can't even, like my deliverability is probably better than it's ever been. Like I get more replies. I log in on Wednesday and like pat myself on the back for like my open rate improved a little bit. So that's what I've been doing. We're due for a scrub. I'm like, oh, I hate, like,
I
used to have autonomous list scrub set up when I was with that provider who shall not be named. But I think you can do autonomous list scrub with ConvertKit too now, right?
You can. Yeah. It's exciting. It's a newish feature, but it is a feature. So if you need any help with that, let me know.
Oh yeah. I will definitely tap you because we do want to set that up. And I think that is just like for you guys, like set up autonomous list scrub and you don't have to think about it.
Yes.
You can build in a re-engagement sequence if you want to, or you can just automatically delete people. Like that is really, really important. And you could set it up once and like not think about it ever again.
Exactly. And I think it helps a lot of people that they don't have to see it happening. And it happens, you know, mm-hmm. like on kind of a drip basis, instead of going into your cold subscribers, you're like, oh my gosh, there's thousands of people here, hundreds of people here. And I just have to go in and like delete all of them. So that's a more emotional experience, I think, than just letting something run in the background. You don't even really see it.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously make sure it's working properly. But aside from that, it can just do the hard work for you.
We recently had to delete like 4,000 people and we had them like put aside, like they were all tagged and we knew who they were. And like, you know, I have Sandra Booker is my fractional COO. She does like a lot of the work for me in ConvertKit and she's such a pro, like she knows everything. And she was like, oh, I'm just like really nervous to delete these people. Even though we downloaded a spreadsheet, like we had the CSV, it was still hard to do. So
I'm really
looking, that's kind of like a next couple months thing that I really want to get set up.
Yeah.
Because my open rate's great, but I also have like apparently like 20% cold subscribers. So I'm just can't wait to get rid of them and see my rates get even
higher. Your open rates are going to be insane.
They're going to be insane. Yeah. And I guess that's one thing I wanted to mention because I'm like just sort of wrapping my head around this myself for your listeners. Hi, everyone. It's not just me and you.
I forget.
Click to open rate. I really like this as a metric better than click through rate because and technically click-through rate would be more accurate because click-to-open rate is everyone who, like the percentage of people who clicked that actually opened the email. But that includes people that may not have opened just because of mail privacy protection, they got marked as open. So it's not exactly accurate. However, it fluctuates way more than like your click-through rate. You might send an email that gets way more clicks, but your click-through rate is only like 0.5% higher because of the size of your list. Like your click to open rate fluctuates more. I just find it actually gives me a better gauge on how well the email performed. Does that make sense, Alyssa?
It totally makes sense. Yes. Because the pool of people it's looking at is small. The denominator, I guess, is smaller. And yeah, I agree. It gives you a much better lens on what's really happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've seen now that in ConvertKit, it's a lot easier to track your click to open rate than it was before. There's like a new analytics section and you can actually see your click to open rate, I believe, on every single link, which is interesting.
Oh, you can even see it on the graph. Like
yeah,
the graph where you just drag your mouse along and think about, you know, just pat yourself on the back for being awesome.
I love that. Well, I feel like I could talk to you for a lot more hours. We're already at about an hour, so I should probably cut us off here soon. Where can people find you if they're like, okay, I need to know more about Tarzan. I need to get on this newsletter that's obviously crushing it. Where should people go?
So you can go to tarzank.com/newsletter and sign up for my newsletter. It's called Emails But Better. And I email every Tuesday. It's really where I do my best work. So if you like what you see here, you know, I have a lot of really cool practices built into my email that you won't see anywhere else. Like you can control the frequency, like I said, like you can do things like hide countdown timers if you don't want to see them. Like I have so many cool consent practices built into my email list that I'm really proud of. And also the writing's great. Like it's funny. It's a lot of real life stories from mostly solopreneur, not really. Like I do have a small team, but it's fun. I read all my replies. So that's a bit of my job, but I make it really palatable. I mean, I also have a great website if you want to, like, if you're considering working with me.
Your website is amazing.
Thank you.
I was going to want to tell you that at some point in the episode. This is the perfect time. Like, I think it's the most beautiful website I've ever seen.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. This is my second time saying this today, but
it's so good.
It is the best website I've ever had. And I've had probably four since starting my business in 2016. And the designer is 16creative.com. Her name's Gigi. She's awesome. And she helped a lot putting the website together, but it is so clear. Like it's so clear. It's not hypey. And there's lots of cool freebies there. If you want like a swipe file or something, if you're interested in working with me one-on-one, I also have several group programs. Like I'm always offering something. And if you want to know what's available, get on my email list. Actually the opening section to all of my newsletters is like, here's what's on sale this month. I'm also on LinkedIn. That's the channel that I'm on. So if you want to like in a less committal, like low commitment way, you could also talk to me there, but I prefer you talk to me in the inbox.
Nice. I love it. I definitely need you to come back because like even in the last 10 minutes, there are so many things I wanted to like ask you about and go on another tangent about, but I can't. So please come back. This was so much fun.
I would happily come back for part two anytime. And I also want you to stick my name in the suggestion box for Craft and Commerce 2025.
I'm going to DM Haley right now who runs that because I think you need to be there. I think you need to be at all of them, but
yeah,
I'll tell her.
Me too. Cool. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Alyssa. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. This was great. And we will see you next time you come on because it's happening for sure.
Great.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to Deliverability Defined.
Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening. And if you have time, please leave us a review.
You can find a resource guide for today's show at convertkit.com/deliverability, where we outline all of the information you need to know from today's episode.
If you have a question or topic you want us to cover, let us know within the ConvertKit community or at convertkit.com/deliverability.
We'll see you next week.